Susie Jones is a reporter for WCCO Radio in Minneapolis. She was the pool reporter yesterday at the Derek Chauvin trial, and I asked her what the scene was like, what the room was like in that courtroom.
Well, John, it was pretty intense, actually. That was my first day as a pool reporter, and I really wasn't sure what to expect. And so I got there early, of course, before the jury even arrived, and inside were a couple of prosecution lawyers. And then it was sort of this moment where Derek Chauvin walked into the courtroom with his attorney, Eric Nelson, and everyone it all happened quick, John. Like, he came in, the jury came in, the judge came in, and we were off. But my job, really, just to remember, is as a pool reporter, I'm not so much paying attention to the actual testimony per se, because my job is to tell reporters what they can't see in the courtroom. Right? So my eyes were pretty much on the jury the entire time, watching them as they listened to testimony. And again, John, watching that video of Derek Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck.
They show the entirety of that video, 9+ minutes. It's one of a few videos that exists, but this is the one that America has been focused on as well. How were they reacting while that video was being played?
There were no audible gasps or tears, but they were leaning in, sitting up and leaning in. It wasn't sort of a passive listening. It was forward-thinking, forward-watching video. I did watch, though, I wanted to tell you this, that I had a chance to look around the room, obviously, and the nephew of George Floyd, Brandon Williams, they grew up together in Houston, was in the back of the courtroom. And I watched him watch the video, I watched to see if he was watching the video, but he actually had his head down and his eyes closed. And in the hallway during one of several breaks, I asked him how to spell his name, and then I asked him how he was doing. And he said, we're just trying to get by. And I said, I noticed you didn't look at the video. And he said, it's really just too hard to watch. He said he felt like he and George were brothers in the sense that they grew up in the same household, because Brandon's guardian was George's oldest sister. And so that's quite a close family. And mm-hmm. So it was just too painful for him, John, to watch that video.
The two girls that first came upon the scene, one of them was 9 years old, and she took the stand. We weren't able to see her because she's a juvenile, but we could hear her. And she said it felt like he was stopping his breathing, and it was kind of like hurting him, etc. You were able to see that testimony, huh?
Yeah, and she was very sweet, 9-year-old, and her name, I think we can say her first name is Judea. She said she was kind of sad and then mad. She said it in such a little 9-year-old way, and then, as you said, went on to say the rest.
So what does the other side say? I mean, you have the video, you have the testimony, you have a firefighter who was also testifying. In fact, before you answer, what does the other side say? Can you talk a little bit about the testimony of that woman, the firefighter?
Well, she came upon the scene. She was out for a walk. It was May 25th. It was a warm night, Memorial Day night. And she came upon the scene. She saw lights and thought perhaps that it might have been some of her crew, being that she was a firefighter. And when she got closer, she noticed, obviously, there were these officers around this man. And as she crossed the street, which you can see in surveillance camera video, she noticed that George Floyd was having difficulty breathing, and that at that point, the situation was becoming more severe, more dire. And she is heard on video saying, "May I please come in and check a pulse?" That's what she does. She goes on calls all the time of unresponsive people and has to check for a pulse, and she was not allowed to do that. She talked about one of the officers telling her if she really knew her job, she would know she should not be interfering with a police interaction. That was a moment. But yeah, so she was also, John, a bit, I would say, argumentative, or I called it snarky with you earlier when we spoke, because she was offering more information than was being asked. And that was true as well of Donald Williams, who is the MMA fighter, and he also was offering more information.
What do you mean by that? Give me an example, Susie.
Well, she, instead of a yes or no answer, she'd answer, and then she'd say, because Chauvin killed George Floyd. Like, she'd just blurt out that statement, which had nothing to do with the yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, the word grandstanding comes to mind, but that might not be right. But it's like stepping outside the bounds. And I'll tell you what, Judge Peter Cahill, he will not put up with that. And he admonished her several times. And that's when he kind of abruptly shut things down yesterday at 4:45. He's just like, okay, we're done.
But I understand, Susie, the impulse of somebody who's witnessed this and wants to get their word in, right? So if you're being asked a question on the stand and you give the answer, but you think, but no, wait, I want you to know that I think that this police officer killed that man. He murdered that man. Did she not use the word murder? I mean, maybe she didn't, Susie, but I could see her desire to make sure people understood her take on the scene.
Yes, of course you understand her desire, but you have to operate in some kind of realm of decorum in a courtroom, and that actually what she said was stricken. When it's stricken, it's still stricken from the record, but the jurors still heard her say that, right? They can't unhear that. So it should be an interesting day.
What
she picks up today, by the way.
Could you, the firefighter will be on the stand again this morning?
She'll continue testimony, yep.
Be interesting to see how the decorum issue is handled. But can you talk about how Chauvin's attorneys are cross-examining these witnesses?
Yeah, I think one of the issues that the defense is raising is that it was an unruly, dangerous-looking crowd, menacing crowd, and so that's why they didn't pay attention as well to George Floyd, because they were surrounded by an unruly crowd, and the prosecution obviously set the scene up saying that it wasn't. It was probably six or seven people, all quite, I would say, angry. That was another word that kept coming up. Were they angry? And none of the witnesses would agree that they were angry. They kept saying they were feeling desperate. So that's the defense's argument, is to pick apart these witnesses and to try to get to this sense of it all being angry and unruly. That's one piece of their defense. And they really grilled the witnesses. Once the prosecution asked the questions, defense attorney Eric Nelson, you know, that was his job then to go after him on different things. And their training, they spent a lot of time talking about training and knowledge of medical issues relating to people who are unconscious. The video is very powerful, and they know that. And they're just trying to set up their defense, mm-hmm. which is obviously to say that it was an unruly crowd, and that, as we'll learn later in this trial, John, is that they're going to say that he had drugs in his system and that he had high blood pressure and that he would have died anyway.
About the unruliness of the crowd, so therefore the officer maybe was less attentive to George Floyd because he had a scene that was evolving around him. I suppose mm-hmm. that's how that defense goes. And if you're not an expert on police tactics or maybe EMT tactics, then maybe your opinion about what's happening isn't valid. Although the testimony of the firefighter would seem to belie that. You would think that she does have some expertise there.
That's what she argued, is that she does have expertise and training in the field. So anyway, she did speak to her training and her ability, how often she responds to overdoses, because that's another issue they're going to talk about, is the overdose of fentanyl. They say that's what the defense is going to argue as well, that he had so many drugs in his system that contributed to his death.
How is Minneapolis, how are the Twin Cities reacting to this? I presume while the country is watching this trial, you all must be waiting on bated breath up there for how this plays out.
Downtown, as you know, because you worked here for so many years with us, it looks like a compound, like a military compound.
If Chauvin is found not guilty, then the police in Minneapolis need to be prepared for that, don't they?
Yeah, they sure do. They have a lot of manpower. You know, 3,000 National Guard troops are on standby. It would be shocking to you, John, if you came.
Susie Jones is a reporter at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, a colleague and old friend of mine. Chauvin, it should be remembered, is charged with murder and manslaughter. Floyd was arrested after being accused of trying to pass a counterfeit $20 bill at a store.